Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Involving Families in the CFSR Process conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. If anyone should require any assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. I would now like to turn the conference over to our host, Ms. Mary O'Brien. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. My name is Mary O'Brien, and on behalf of the National Child Welfare Resource Center for Organizational Improvement, what we call as an abbreviation, NRCOI, the National Resource Center for Organizational Improvement, I want to welcome you to today's call on involving families in the CFSR process. I'm going to start by introducing the people involved in today's call and going over a couple of logistics. We're pleased that we have with us today representatives from two of the National Resource Centers who are co-sponsoring today's call and will be moderating the discussions: Steve Priester from the National Resource Center for Organizational Improvement and Stephanie Boyd-Serafin from the National Resource Center for Family-Centered Practice and Permanency Planning. I'm going to turn the call over to them in a couple of minutes so they can introduce themselves and moderate today's call. We also have with us today two teams of people from two states that have been through the second round of the Child and Family Service Review process and have had some experience involving families in that process that they are going to share with us. First, we'll hear from North Carolina. We have from North Carolina with us Candace Britt, who's a Special Projects Coordinator in the North Carolina Division of Social Services, and Stacey Darby, who's President of the Foster and Adoptive Parent Association in North Carolina. Then we'll hear from Oregon. From Oregon, we have Angela Long, who's the CFSR coordinator for the Oregon Department of Human Services, and Ruth Taylor, who's director of the Parents Anonymous programs. A couple of things that I want to mention before we begin today. We have representatives from almost 40 states, several ACF regional offices, and a number of other national organizations registered for today's call. So we expect to have around 70 or 80 lines calling in. And some of these lines have big groups of people listening in. I think we have a big group from Bibb County, Georgia, for example. Welcome to everyone. We're really glad you're here. With this number of lines, it's really hard to keep background noise down. So we are going to keep the lines for participants closed while presenters are speaking. And then the operator will open all the lines for questions and discussions at a few points throughout the call. When the lines are open, you can speak up with a comment or a question. Please do speak up at this point, as we'd really like this to be as interactive as possible. We really welcome questions and comments. We also know there are a lot of folks on the line from other places that have had a lot of experience with involving families in the CFSR. I think Pennsylvania and California, for example, may be out there on the line, and we'd love to hear suggestions or ideas about things that have worked in other places as we have time. When the lines are open for questions, please remember that we can hear everything happening at your site. So if people are talking or there is other noise, please mute your phone. If you don't have that feature on your phone, you can push *6 and then *6 again to unmute your line. There are some handouts and background information for today's call on the NRCOI website, on our website. The email that you got with the phone number for today's call has the link to the website in it. So hopefully some of you saw that and were able to access those documents. For those of you who didn't, I'm going to give you the web link again now so that you can look now if you happen to be at a computer, or if you can look them up later when you get to a computer. The handouts, as I mentioned, are at our website, which is www.nrcoi, National Resource Center for Organizational Improvement, nrcoi.org. Click on teleconferences on the left, and you'll find them under the date. What we have there is an agenda with contact information for today's speakers. Then there are five other documents that are general background on this topic. One is the focus area of the CFSR Training and Technical Assistance Package on this topic that Steve and Stephanie are going to talk a little bit about. Then there is some material from North Carolina, a PowerPoint on this topic, and the charter of the collaborative that you'll hear about. Then there's some materials used by Oregon with their parent mentors and parent leader programs. Steve and I were just talking, too, that we wanted to mention that on our website, that NRCOI website, we've just put up a new curriculum on systems of care. It's called Primer Hands-On Child Welfare training on systems of care. And there's a section in there in one of the module on provider networks, which I think is module, eight, on involving families. So there's some other, that's another resource that's out there. Okay, with that background, I'm going to turn this over to Steve to begin.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the call. I hope that you're going to enjoy and learn from this and learn from each other. I wanted to, just by way of introduction, remark that the whole issue of family involvement was really brought into the human services field by Children's Mental Health Services about 25 years ago, and they've become quite sophisticated in the involvement of family members in the design and delivery and evaluation of human services. That movement has come late to child welfare, but is really beginning to pick up some steam. I was so impressed with the handouts that Mary collected and posted on our website. It shows me that in the past 5 years in child welfare, we've gained some sophistication. We have a long way to go, but we are beginning, and the Child and Family Services Review is in some ways an impetus to involving our families in our field. So having said that, let me just welcome you and turn it over to Stephanie Boyd-Serafin.
Hi, everyone. I'm delighted to be here. And let me just speak on behalf of the TA Network and specifically our Resource Center, which is has a focus of really promoting family-centered practice that contributes to the safety, permanency, and well-being of children while meeting the needs of their families. And so largely our focus is on family engagement. And we just want to express that we would be happy to be a support as states are looking at involving families in the CFSR process, and we would share in that work with certainly Steve Pricer at Organizational Improvement. So happy to be here, and just know that we're looking forward to being a support in this area.
Thank you, Stephanie. Well, let's go to our first panelists, presenters, Candace Britt and Stacey Darby from North Carolina. Candace, I think you changed your title of your job has changed recently, wasn't it?
Yes, I'm now the CFSR coordinator.
Good.
Very good.
Okay, well, go ahead and tell us what you guys have been up to in North Carolina.
Okay, well, this is Candace, and I'll Stacey and I are going to do this together. I'll give you just an overview of how our state is organized in North Carolina, and then I'll let Stacey speak on her organization. But North Carolina is a state-supervised, county-administered system. We have 100 county departments. The last statistics that we have for a full calendar year, we received around 64,000 reports of child abuse, neglect, dependency, and we have around 11,000 kids in care. So that's that's a real high overview of sort of organizationally where we are. And I do work for the State Division of Social Services and am the Child and Family Services Review Coordinator. And Stacey, I'll let you talk about your organization.
Okay. I'm Stacey Darby, and I'm the president of the North Carolina Foster and Adoptive Parent Association. The association has been around in North Carolina for over 35 years. It has waxed and waned, as a lot of nonprofit associations do, but it's been pretty strong in the last several years. NCFAPA is right now a total volunteer board and staff. There is one 20-hour-a-week paid administrative person who handles some of our training coordination. So we have a grant contract with the state DSS each year, and we do training and advocacy and support for foster, adoptive, and kinship families.
All right, and Stacey and I are going to sort of walk through a PowerPoint presentation together, and I'm really excited about this topic, so if the moderators will help us stay on track in terms of time constraints. what I wanted to do, I know that the topic is involving families in the CFSR, but I wanted to just back up a little bit to give folks on the line sort of a picture of where we are in North Carolina in terms of system reform that we have in place, because I think that speaks to how we view family engagement overall, not just related to the CFSR, but how is it that we're going to continuously improve our system. And one of the things that we've done, we've been, since 2001, involved in what we call multiple response system, and it is a system reform change based on family-centered practice principles. And within that system reform, it's about reforming policy and shifting philosophy and focus around the way that we work with families. Some of the key MRS concepts are that families are unique and distinctive. One size does not fit all. Families are much more likely to engage and carry out a plan that they have truly taken part in planning, and that as an agency, we won't be involved in that family's life forever, so we really need to build a support network around that family. And the seven strategies of MRS, because MRS is system reform, it's not just an alternative response. It's really a reform from intake all the way through permanency. And the components of it are collaboration between TANF and child welfare and strengths-based structured intake process. In that intake process, we ask about what the family's strengths are. We ask about what is important to know about the family's culture, the choice of two approaches in responding to reports of abuse and neglect, so we can now do family assessments versus just a strict forensic approach, collaboration with law enforcement on abuse reports, redesign of CPS in-home services, and the heart of our system reform is the use of child and family team meetings throughout the life of the case, and then also the use of shared parenting meetings during foster care cases. One of the things that it's really important to, you know, this, we've been doing this since 2001, and it's still a work in progress. We had 10 counties pilot this initiative, and we now have all 100 counties implementing MRS, but we're at different levels of implementation because this is such a change in philosophy. But what we want to do is look at what lies beneath child maltreatment rather than focusing on what is often just a symptom. So not just necessarily incident-driven. We want to look at the underlying reasons for the deed and what the family needs to keep themselves and their children safe. Another thing that goes hand-in-hand with our system of with our MRS implementation is the system of care. And system of care, North Carolina did receive a federal grant from the Children's Bureau. We've been implementing that. We're in our fifth year of implementation. It's been extremely helpful in engaging families. It's all about partnerships, building on strengths, and the principles and values of system of care are interagency collaboration, child and family partnership, individualized strengths-based care, cultural competence, community-based services and support, and accountability. Another thing that's really important to mention is that, you know, we've been doing this at all levels, providing, you know, changing our policy, our consultation as state staff with our county partners. Every division employee has been through family-centered practice training. We have actually incorporated the principles of partnership into state division staff performance evaluations, and those principles are everyone desires respect, everyone needs to be heard, everyone has strengths, judgments can wait, partners share power, and partnership is a process. The other really cool thing that we've done is as we interview new applicants at the state division, we ask them how it is that they would put those principles into practice. The next thing I will move into is talking about child and family teams. And I talked about this being the heart of our system reform. Another cool thing in North Carolina that's been happening is that our child and family serving agencies, we have some real momentum with mental health, DPI, moving towards operating from a child and family team perspective. And the team decision-making approach is both a philosophy and a practice. As a philosophy, it reflects the belief that families can solve their own problems and that no one knows a family's strengths, needs, and problems better than that family. In practice, child and family teams bring that philosophy to life in a real-world setting. I'll let Stacy, if you want to chime in, let's see. Well, just around child and family teams, if you're looking at the PowerPoint, there's a graphic here about child and family teams and who should be at the table. And inside the circle, family is central with the facilitator organizing the meeting. And Stacy asked me earlier, hey, where's the foster parent in this graphic? And the answer to that is that the foster parent is considered a part of the family. They're integral in that child and family team, and they're certainly a part of the shared parenting, which is really a different way of partnering between the birth family and the foster parent. But you'll see from that graphic that a child and family team is just a way to whoever is needed at the table, who it is that the family wants at the table, whether that's a pastor, a friend, a neighbor, everybody's at the table who needs to be there.
We have taken, in the association, we have started calling shared parenting maintaining connections just because shared parenting is a scary term to brand new foster parents coming in to be licensed. And so we've tried to move it to maintaining connections. And I think some of the instructors are actually starting to do that now too, that they don't actually use the term shared parenting because while the concept is great, we don't want to scare people off with it either. So
no, we don't want to scare people. We embrace the concept.
It's the same concept, same thing, different name.
Well, and language is important.
Yeah.
To talk specifically about how we in North Carolina have engaged youth and families systemically, one of the things that we have in place is the North Carolina Collaborative for Children, Youth, and Families. This is known as the State Collaborative, and it's chaired by a university partner and a parent. And it's a collaborative where the majority of North Carolina's child and family-serving agencies sit at the table. We meet twice a month. And North Carolina uses the collaborative as our stakeholder group for our for the CFSR process and for the APSR. The other thing that we've done is that we made a decision at the state level that whenever we're developing policy, that we would do so in partnership with youth and family members, and we have a way to compensate them for their time spent in meetings, not just a stipend. We heard loudly and clearly from family folks that, their time is valuable, and as professionals, we are paid to sit around the table, and, family members are away from their jobs when we're asking them to come to meetings. So they absolutely, their input is as valuable as the professionals, and we needed to recognize that. So we have a way to compensate them for their time and reimburse them for their travel.
And that has made a huge difference because not only the fact that people are being compensated, but the fact that they're being taken as being important enough to be compensated, because there's a lot of things that just go into how you feel about going somewhere and how a family member is perceived sitting at a table of professionals or salaried people or whatever. And I know the first meeting that I went to I think it was assessing, getting ready for the CFSR and the assessment group. And I sat at a table with probably 35, 40 other people, and I looked around and I knew I was the only parent in the room. And at the time, this compensation plan hadn't been fully developed yet and things. And so if you're a parent sitting somewhere and you know that it's the middle of the day and you've just driven an hour and a half to get there and you're in a meeting for 8 hours, et cetera, and the feeling, and we can't discount feelings sometimes, is that your importance is not being taken into consideration because everyone else is there as part of their position, and you are there on a volunteer position as just being I'm sorry, I'm not coming up with the right word, as just being involved in the process, I guess. And when North Carolina, when the state, at a state level, they came up with knowing that we do need to compensate and your time is valuable and you are important and we need to hear from you, it made a whole turn of the way people felt about participating. And I'm going to put on mute for a moment here because I just had a child get out of bed.
The other thing, and one thing we're doing, Stacy spoke to, sometimes family members may not feel, some absolutely are prepared or more prepared than the professionals, but we wanted to make sure that they did feel enabled to be full participants at the table. And through some of our family resource centers, through our community-based programs, we were actually doing some training around how family members can fully engage with around child welfare issues. So that's the other thing that we're doing that sort of goes hand in hand with compensating family members. The other thing that the collaborative has helped us do, and again, this is, you know, co-chaired by a parent, we developed a cross-system child and family team curriculum that is trained, that is co-trained by a professional and a parent, and that was through blended funds. There's a website for the collaborative. NRCOI helped the collaborative with some strategic planning recently and developing a charter. We have some cross-agency committees where a bulk of the work of the collaborative gets done. There's a training committee, a cultural competence committee, a membership committee, a comprehensive assessment, adolescent substance abuse, and a common outcome measures. We've also been planning a statewide system of care conference that we are super excited about. That's this coming Monday and Tuesday, and we have really good representation from many different child-serving agencies. Another way that we involve families and youth in the statewide assessment was that as a state division, we completed surveys with input from SAFO is our Strong Able Youth Speaking Out. That's our advocacy group, our youth advocacy group here in North Carolina, and NCFAPA, which is Stacy's organization. We sent out surveys through county DSSs to foster youth, and Stacy helped us by putting the foster and adoptive parent survey on her website. And because we didn't get a great response from the youth, we then said, okay, we need a backup plan because we really need some input from youth in our system. So we did focus groups around the state, and we were really careful in doing this because when you go out, I didn't want to give any false hope around us as a system being able to change everything that the youth viewed as problematic, because the reality is that we couldn't meet all of their wishes. So I think it's really important that you communicate what it is that you are intending to do with the information, and that you do follow back up with them on here's the results. And this was so beneficial to us that we actually have in our draft program improvement plan, we want to do the focus groups on an annual basis, and we want to do the surveys on an annual basis, and then couple that with a focus group that each county director of social services leads, because I think it's important for the county directors to hear it directly from the youth.
I was going to jump in just for a second on the surveys the surveys that you did. Canvas and State DSS prepared the surveys, and then we did put them on our website. And the other thing that we did was we emailed them out to our members, and we took the surveys. We hand-took actual concrete copies of the surveys to any meetings that any of our board was attending. And we encouraged people to fill them out there and actually collected them and brought them back and bulk mailed them back to the state, because we know how once things go out, even though people have good intentions, they don't always come back. So we tried to be real conscientious about getting those back. The other thing that we did and that I would encourage is that Candace and I spoke at length about how we were going to make these surveys so people felt confident and comfortable filling them out, because we are 100 counties, some of our counties are very small, and we have very limited amount of foster parents in those counties. And by the defining information in the survey, it would be really easy for a director or a social worker to be able to pick out who that person was. And we just needed everybody to feel really comfortable that they could answer the surveys honestly. So we worked out being able to do that and assuring them that there were going to be no county-by-county information given back to the counties as individual reports. Would that be it, Candace?
Right.
Pretty much that we didn't give any individual information back to the counties.
Right. So. Absolutely. And thank you for reminding me of that. We did talk at length about that and recognize that that would absolutely be important for those foster parents in those small counties.
So I think we got some really honest feedback doing it that way.
Right. The other thing, you know, in North Carolina, we have a quality assurance system that somewhat mirrors the federal review process in terms of doing a case read and then interviewing stakeholders. And so for years now, North Carolina's division staff have interviewed county foster parents, foster youth, local, you know, mental health providers, local stakeholders in each county. So our stakeholders are accustomed to being interviewed and asked for information. So how we involved the family and youth in the on-site CSSR was, again, we, you know, tried to solicit participation as on-site reviewers. And Stacy was an on-site reviewer in one of the sites, and she can speak about that experience. She went through the training and all of that. And we continued to communicate with SAYSO and the Foster Parent Association just about where we were in the process. But Stacey, you want to speak about your experience as a reviewer?
Mm-hmm. Sure. First, I think that the time commitment to be a reviewer is huge. Not only the time commitment, participating in the statewide assessment, which were many meetings, which I think participating in the statewide assessment is a great, great tool and a great idea, too, because I think that parents and families get more in-depth information on what is actually happening in the state and what the figures all mean and more in-depth explanations on that. Also, I get to kind of see how long the process is. Like sometimes I know everyone would like changes to happen immediately, or if it's talked about this week, probably by next month, maybe it could go into effect. And I think in participating in this, you see how long the process does take. I think also you can view things from both directions because you're participating with people from all various organizations, so you see a lot of. Quote sides, not that we do sides, but different directions of it. And then I think you can also see what's feasible to change in the near future and what isn't really even feasible to do. And then you move into the CFSR and do the time, right, once again, the time commitment. And I just talk about that because I think that families and parents, that is probably the biggest obstacle. But I think part of this compensation plan will help, especially an at-home parent or something, with care for their children, because I mean, the crux of it is we are about children and families. And so if we're foster parents, we're usually parenting children at the time. And this time commitment and not being able to cover your expenses for it is probably a big hindrance usually. So the time commitment on doing the training on the tool and doing that first and then doing the actual review is big. I think that one thing that I wanted to say is that it's exhausting, so everybody should know how exhausting it is going into it. And I was reading on several of the things of the information request that a lot of people were – looks like a lot of states were kind of holding back on using parents in their review process. And I think that – I kind of understand some of it, but I think that if parents are, you know, quote chosen, that they'll be able to get up to speed on what's happening and on how the process is and how the files are and what's maintained. I think that I don't think that there's any reason not to use them from my point of view. And you get up to speed real quickly when you walk in the room. Also, we did not have the best experience in the county that we did. We did three counties in North Carolina, and we did not have the best experience in the county I was in. The experience with the people I worked with was great. The person I was partnered with was great. and I was partnered with someone from another state. But we had we worked really hard, and we worked long hours, and it was kind of demoralizing, the attitude that was taken with us while we were there. So it wasn't as a parent or as a family member, it was the whole group together. So just and I know that the rest of our state did not have that experience. So we just had a poor experience. Other than that, the rest of it was great. It was really eye-opening, and I've shared it with a lot of parents, because we don't usually get to see the records that our DSS keeps and that the social workers have, and it was really interesting to see that and to see how what the formatting of that was and how decisions are made. And I think that the approach that we're doing now with the two approaches to responding seem to be a little bit at odds with the federal reviewers, because we're not just in that mode, because we respond differently with our MRS. So I think that we were kind of fighting against tide with that a little bit. I don't mean to be negative about it at all. I would I'm not going to say I would do it again. I may do it again. But it was a great experience, and I think that it was eye-opening, and I think that our input was taken differently also. So in a good way. So I think that being involved was definitely a positive. I would hope that next time we would have a parent involved in each one of our reviews. I think we just had one county with a parent involved.
Stacey, I'm going to stop you now.
Okay.
Because it's been 25 minutes. And let's see if there's any questions or comments from the participants. So, Healy, if you want to remove the hold button or whatever it's called.
All right, sir, all lines are open. And again, as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you need to mute your lines, please press star, then six.
Okay, are there any questions or comments for North Carolina?
I have a question. I was wondering if the PowerPoint that they were referring to are available.
Yeah, it is on our website. It's if you look at the web, this is Mary O'Brien, at that www.nrcoi.org, the link that was sent to you in the email. If you look under teleconferences November 29th, that under North Carolina, we did post that PowerPoint.
Thank you.
You can go back to that.
Thank you.
This is South Carolina. I have a question for North Carolina. They reference parents being compensated for attending the family meetings. So I was just curious as what source of funds they use to do that.
What source of funds?
Yep.
Yes.
Through our community-based programs. I have the policy right here. It's a federal state match, and I may have to follow up with you to give you the exact source of funding. I apologize. I knew somebody was going to ask that, and I brought the policy, but we don't refer to it in the policy.
Either of them.
Okay. And this is, again, Mary Williams from South Carolina. If we can get that information, that would be helpful.
Okay. Thank you. And I just wanted to say, this is Candace, I just wanted one sentence to close what we were talking about in terms of involving, one of the things that Stacey spoke to was that she was involved in the statewide assessment process. I think it's really important that you involve children, youth, and families throughout the process. We've had a lot of participation throughout our program improvement plan, but we've been able to do that because we connected with them early on. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah, do you also want to, Candace, to just add something about the involving youth and families in the PIP process? You've gotten through the statewide assessment and the on-site. Do you want to just say a couple words about that?
Yeah, sure. We have a thematic approach to our program improvement plan that are really based on system of care principles. One of those is child, youth, and family involvement. And we actually have four chairs of that work group, which got a little squirrely, but it was important. We had two division staff people and then a youth from a youth organization and a parent from a parent advocacy organization co-chairing that. They met on a regular basis and helped us develop that section of the PIP. So,
Great.
Any other comments or questions from participants?
This is
following up on the earlier question. This is Tim Hunter in Washington State. Just want to clarify that I think it's great you're able to compensate parents. That's a huge step, I think. Just wanted to clarify, is that going on both for the family meeting participation and also for CFSR-related participation?
Yes.
Great, thanks.
Yes. Okay, great. And this is Mary O'Brien. I think when we get some information from North Carolina and how they've been funding that, we will post additional information on our website and let everybody who registered know that it's up there.
So, Mary Williams, give us a few days, then go to our website, okay?
That'll be fine. Thank you.
This is Melinda from Illinois. I had a question in regards to the confidentiality issue. Did that ever arise in having the foster parents participate in the reviews and looking at the files? And if so, how did you handle it?
I know that Stacy sat through the training that was provided by JBS and the Children's Bureau, and that was so long ago. Ultimately, no. I mean, that did not come up as a major barrier. We thought it was really important to involve family members, and you know, would love to have involved more than that, but it is challenging. Stacy, do you?
I don't recall if there was anything that I signed on confidentiality or not, but I think, and it's kind of the same thing we talk about in our board meetings, that as foster parents, you are bound by confidentiality anyway, so we figure that it just kind of follows.
This is Steve Pricer. Let me just add, in other states that have done this, the policy has been that they can't review the cases of any foster parents that they know.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Exactly.
Yeah, we can ask North Carolina some more questions later on in the teleconference. Let's go now to Oregon and Angela Long.
Hi, this is Angela, and I'm the CFSR coordinator for Oregon.
Angela, so just one second. Healy, can you turn off the phones again?
At this time, all lines are in a listen only.
Thank you.
Okay, so the background information around Oregon is that we have a state-administered child welfare system, and that system is included as part of a larger Department of Human Services agency, which includes a number of social service programs like TANF, Medicaid, services to seniors, just the whole gamut. We have approximately 2,000 child welfare staff that serve around 23,000 cases through both our in-home and our substitute care services. Kind of switching over to where we are with the CFSR, we began our work around a year ago with working on our self-assessment, and then we had our on-site visit in September. So we're currently waiting for our final report, but we started our PIP work with a kickoff meeting back in October. Oregon, we have a long history of involvement of our partners and stakeholders with our child welfare system, and we felt that this ongoing involvement was the best way to really prepare stakeholders and others for involvement in the CFSR process, because what we found was that we thought it would be really difficult to get people to the table if we hadn't asked them to the table previously. Part of what we recognized was that parents really had a unique perspective on our system, and we've tried to include their voice through a number of our advisory boards and committees, and I think that Ruth is going to talk a little bit here in a minute more about how we do that. One of the areas that we are especially proud of and that we really tried to highlight throughout the CFSR process was a couple of programs that we've developed working with Ruth and her group. And that's the Parent Mentors Program, which we fund through our Title IV-E Waiver Program, and then our Parent Leaders Program, which is called HOPE for short, and that's funded through our System of Care grant. These programs, I think, gave us a really great ready-made resource to go to for the CFSR so that when I needed representation for the statewide assessment work groups and to pull together a stakeholder interview group for the on-site, and then now again as we're working on our PIP work groups, basically I was able to just make a few phone calls and people were more than willing to be involved and participate. And so I think right now I'm going to pass it over to Ruth and have her talk some more about these the Mentor and the Leaders program. Also talk some more about the barriers and issues that they've found that you really need to overcome to successfully collaborate and have parents feel like a part of all of this process.
Okay, and I'm Ruth Taylor, and I'm the Director of Parents Anonymous Programs. And parents, we're the Oregon chapter of a national organization, and the cornerstone of Parents Anonymous is that parent leadership component, that we involve parents in every aspect in the design and implementation of services for families. And it's been our commitment to not have discuss or implement or design services for families without their input, because we're just going to continue doing business as usual. So my involvement is that I run the Parent Mentor Program that's funded, just like Angela said, through foster care dollars from the state. And it was looking at non-traditional employees. We employed all former child welfare clients. The population that we were going to work with was mothers in the beginning, and now we're working with fathers, but mothers coming into the child welfare system because of substance abuse and whose children were being placed in protective custody. So we thought the best way to provide additional support to them and who would uniquely understand their challenges and their experience and their despair other than former parents who had been in the very same situation. So to qualify to be a parent mentor, you had to have been involved with child welfare, you had to have had addiction but be in recovery for 2 years and had your child removed from your custody. So it was a pilot program for a year, and it has been extremely successful, and we have in the past, we're now in our third, going into our fourth year of the program, and it has been, we've been able to engage a population that typically do not engage in services, but because we are using parents who have that identical experience, we have that, it offers hope that recovery is possible and that it works and that people can overcome amazing obstacles and despite the ASPA timeline can be successful in reunification with their children. So one of the key things for me was to ensure that the parent mentors, not only the women that were coming in as mentors, that they would have that opportunity to work, but the workforce development piece was huge, and that they would be recognized, and I think it addresses some of what North Carolina was saying. How do you get people to recognize former child welfare clients who were the worst of the child welfare clients? People, everybody had given up on them, but now they're back in this paraprofessional role, and how are you going to get them to be accepted in this community and work as a partner with child welfare? So that has been a very interesting process, and it took time to develop the credibility and the reputation of the program. And one of the key pieces for me was to ensure that the parent mentor voice or the parent voice would be represented at all the stakeholder meetings and at the advisory councils. So we've been able to do that, and I will come back to that in a moment. The other piece that I have been consulting with the state on is their System of Care Improving Permanency Options project. And out of that are really strong, there's about 22 parents that have emerged from that have really developed strong leadership skills, and they have identified their group. They're called HOPE, which is an acronym for Helping Other Parents Excel. And they are, again, were all former child welfare clients. And some of them had negative and some positive experience with child welfare, but that was we wanted that. We wanted people to see if you could reflect on your experience and if you had an opportunity to change something, what would be your recommendations to improve the system for families and improve outcomes for children. So I think also addressing what North Carolina was saying, it's really important, and whoever is thinking of involving parents, you really need to support the parents. You need to give them training around, first of all, how to tell their story, that they really understand who the audience is they're going to be speaking to, or if they're going to be part of an advisory, who the members are, what the goals and objectives are, because you want them to come in. You don't want them to, they are representing the parent voice, but you want them to be seen as an equal partner. And there is a differential in power because they're sitting at tables with child welfare managers or the head of child welfare, and it's very intimidating in the beginning. So we have invested a lot of time in providing training, and all members of the HOPE group, that's over about 25 in total, have been trained on parent leadership. There's the Parents Anonymous model of shared leadership in action. We have trained all of them in that. We have talked, let everybody tell their story, understand what's appropriate to share at given times, and how to really represent themselves in the most positive light. We just recently, all of our parents, the HOPE group and the parent mentors, all participated in a training that was given by two parents from Colorado and two of the authors of the Family Guide to the Child Welfare System. And they came out and did a fabulous two-day training, and that was really valuable for everybody, and particularly for the mentors, because they're teaching the parents they're working with who are child welfare clients and in the throes of child welfare on how to advocate for themselves, what their rights are, and what they're entitled to, you know, if their children are in foster care, what they're entitled to have visitation, and all those parameters are covered in this guide. So I think the training and support is really important. So when Angela called and needed parents to be part of the assessment, I was quite confident that we could produce parents that, and they did a fabulous job. I was with them when they did their presentation. And, you know, of course they were a little bit nervous because you have these people from D.C. coming out and asking them these very pertinent questions. But it was so valuable, and that's another thing I really want to encourage people to use parents, the value of using a parent, because it's so powerful for a parent to feel that their experience, while it may have been very negative, and some of our parents have had termination of their parental rights, but they are still interested in contributing and seeing how they can contribute to making the system work. And the only way we're going to bring about system change for families is by involving families. So it's to really truly view them as a community partner, and we, like you, the North Carolina people were saying, we need to reimburse them, and it needs to be an automatic thing that we don't say, well, we'll see if we can get you a check, and you need to be respectful. I'm there sitting at this advisory in a paid capacity, so the parent needs to be viewed. They're bringing a unique experience and perspective. They have navigated the child welfare system. I haven't. So we need to respect that. They may not have the credentials, but they have a unique experience. And to make sure that we reimburse them and be really respectful about it. And we're really fortunate here in Oregon that we now have parent representatives on. We have a parent who sits on the State Child Welfare Advisory, and this is a woman who was in prison for 2 years, lost her children, but despite all the odds, got them back, and does an amazing job. And I can guarantee you, if you experience this, it changes the tone of the meeting to have a parent there. It's not that every minute she's saying, oh, this is what happened to me, or when I was, she knows how to really interact positively and does an amazing job representing the parent's voice. So we also have parent leaders sitting on six other county child welfare advisories, and they're on focus groups. We just use parent, and because I run the Parents Anonymous program, and we offer support groups for parents in our community throughout all the state of Oregon, we have access to so many parents who are so willing to give back, and that's the most amazing piece, is they just so much want to be involved, but it needs to be a respectful process, and you need to ensure that you have a system in place that there has to be a training of, like the Child Welfare Advisory Board, they have to learn how to integrate the parent. It's not only the parent needs training, it's the advisory boards. Because how are we going to have this shared leadership or working in partnership unless both of us come to the same conclusion and recognize the value? So obviously I could talk forever, and I'm from Ireland, and that's my forte, but I will stop now, and if you have any questions, I would be glad to answer them.
Okay, Healy, can you turn the phones back on, please?
All right, sir. All lines are open. And again, ladies and gentlemen, star 6 to mute and star 6 again to unmute your line.
Ask participants to please, if you're not talking, put your mute button on. We had some feedback during the last question period. But let's see if you have any questions or comments for Angela and Ruth in Oregon. No questions or comments? Oh, then I'll make a comment. I must tell you, Angela and Ruth, I'm extremely impressed with what you've done. I mean, see, developmentally, you're really far, far ahead of most parts of the country. You gave us some really good ideas.
Okay, thank you. One piece I would like to add, Steve, is that in the system of care grant, the consultation that I work on with the state, they, one of the things that was important to me was that they would commit money to allowing parents to go to the National Parent Leadership Institute in Washington, D.C. It's held every February. So to date, we have had 9 parents from the HOPE group have been able to attend that conference. And that has been amazing because, again, it really gives them that additional skill, that exposure. And they have 2 days of training. And on the final morning, they go to Capitol Hill and they meet their congressional representatives. And that has been powerful. So any contract that I get with the state, I'm not interested in taking it unless it puts in that piece that I can cover the expenses of a parent going to D.C., and that means their child care, their salary, any expenses, their hotel, the entire thing, stipends for their time there. And we've been lucky that the state has been very responsive around that. So that's one piece I also want to encourage other people to consider.
I'm glad you brought that up, Ruth, because that also is quite unusual. You know, we send our professionals to conferences for their enrichment and continuing education, but if we're going to really take parents seriously, we have to do that equally well.
And the congressional representatives are so delighted. They are so tired of programs coming in. It's like, next, who's next? But when they hear parents' voices, I mean, it is so moving. And then they'll start saying, well, one of my family had an addiction. Or one of, you know, it's so humanizing for them, and it's an amazing way to ensure you're going to get some funding, that you're going to have your congressional people supporting you in any funding application at a national level.
Right. This is Mary O'Brien. Let me just say to people that the material about the parent mentor program that Ruth described, and also the HOPE program, the brochures and the job descriptions for people, the parents who are hired as part of those programs, are listed on our website. They had provided those to us. Ruth had also mentioned the Family's Guide to the Child Welfare System that they had gotten some training on out there, I think, and that's a really great document that we also have posted on the website, a good resource, great resource for people to look at. I'll just ask a question to you guys from Oregon, too. So just to clarify, Ruth, all those programs that you, the parent mentor program, the HOPE program, has really cultivated parent leaders, and then those people have been then involved in, you mentioned some of these county advisory groups and focus groups. I assume you mean, and Angela, maybe you can address this, you mean that they were involved, then some of these parents were involved in different stages of the CFSR process. Can you describe a little bit, like, the parents involved in the statewide assessment, the on-site, and the PIP, how that worked? It was some of these parents that Ruth described, you know, being developed as leaders who then served, like, on the statewide assessment group. Is that right? Angela?
Angela and Ruth, are you there? Well, it looks like we lost them.
Huh.
Their lines are still connected. I'm not sure if they have their phone on mute or have stepped away.
Right. *6 to unmute lines. Okay, well. Steve, do you want to go ahead with seeing whether there's questions for other people out there, like if Candace and Stacy are still there? Can you hear us still?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good. Now, I know there were a lot of other people on the line, and there had been some other questions earlier, I think. Are there any questions that we could go back, Steve, to discussing questions for North Carolina as well?
Yes. Let me see. Do you have any questions for North Carolina? Let me just mention one thing that Candace did not mention. The Stakeholder Collaborative, the North Carolina Collaborative for Children, Youth, and Families, is a standing body with participants, about 60 regular participants, and a couple thousand people on the mailing list who are drawn in to serve on committees. But that body serves as the consultative body not only for child welfare but for all the human services, human services and education and health. So if there is a federal mandate or a state mandate that requires collaboration of an agency, they all use that same body, which is really quite unique.
Right.
And the charter, I believe, I sent to you all, so that should be on the website if folks are interested in taking a look at that.
Exactly. Steve, since we have a moment here, would you tell people about the focus area of the TTA package? I think that wasn't mentioned by you or Stephanie earlier, and we should sort of tell people about what that is and what kind of technical assistance the resource centers can offer around that.
Sure, Mary, I'd be happy to. In preparation for the second round of the Child and Family Services Review, the Children's Bureau asked the National Resource Centers who provide technical assistance to develop a package of training and technical assistance that they could make available to states and tribes to help them prepare for their second Child and Family Services Review. There was going to be such a strong emphasis in the second round of CFSRs on stakeholder involvement. Let me back up and say, we developed about 10 focus areas that we can offer states, and four of them pertain to involving community stakeholders. So focus area three is how to effectively involve stakeholders in general, and then, that's four, focus area four. Then 4A is involving courts, 4B is involving tribes, and 4C is about involving families, family caregivers, birth parents, and youth in the life of the agency, including the Child and Family Services Review. There's a synopsis of each one of those focus areas, as well as the trainer's guide and the participant's guide and the handouts on our website. So it's NRCOI. Mary, can you tell more specifically where people should go on the website to get that?
Sure. That synopsis is right. We've put it right as one of the handouts for this call, Steve. So it's on that www.nrcoi.org website. You can get it right from the front page under the CFSR Training and Technical Assistance Package, or you can go to teleconferences to November 29th, and we put it right there as on one of the handouts.
Does anybody have any questions about the focus areas or how to access them? So if you are interested in getting help, for example, in involving birth parents, family caregivers, and youth in the life of the agency and in the CFSR, you could just go to your regional office and ask for approval to approach the resource centers for assistance.
Can you hear us in Oregon? We're back on the call.
Oh, great.
Sorry, you were in the middle of asking a question and we got cut off. My apologies.
Oh, that's great that you got back. Steve, should we go back to that? I had asked Angela to address this question. Ruth, you had described the parent mentor program, the HOPE program, and how that had cultivated a lot of parent leaders who were then involved in some things like county advisory groups. I thought we'd ask Angela to clarify how parents were involved in the statewide assessment on-site review and PIP process. And just, you know, I wanted to make sure I was clear that it was some of those parent leaders who had been developed through some of these programs that were then engaged in the CFSR process.
Right. That, in addition to Ruth, she was part of that process too, but they were on work groups, and we had Ruth and three other parents who were in a stakeholder group that was at the statewide level, and they were fabulous.
That was part of the statewide assessment process or an ongoing stakeholder group for the whole CFSR?
The stakeholder group for the on-site.
Mm-hmm. Were there other things specifically that you did, Angela, during the CFSR process in terms of involving parents that you thought was really helpful?
Well, we just had, basically ongoing representation on all of our work groups, and that's continuing through the PIP process also.
Okay. And do you have a process for compensating parents to do that?
Yes, we do.
Do you guys have any sense of the source of your funding for that?
We use our System of Care grant for that.
Oh, okay. Steve, I wonder if we should ask, because I think the lines are still open, whether there's other people out there who have had some positive experiences involving families in their states, like if anyone from Pennsylvania or California or some of the Colorado counties have done a lot. Is there anybody out there who'd want to share some positive experiences that they've had involving families?
That's a good idea, Mary. Let's open this up, folks. Healy, are the phones on?
Yes, sir. All lines are open.
All right, thank you. We'd like to hear from the participating states about your own experiences in involving family members in the life of the agency and or the Child and Family Services reviews.
This is Linda from California, and I really concur with several of the things that were presented in the morning conversations here. We have involved families in our CFSR process through focus groups, through our statewide assessment team, as well as the decision-making body that we're referring to as our steering committee. And I really appreciate that other states are also helping parents participate by providing resources to them. Ours have included being able to cover travel, any lost wages due to taking time off of work, child care, those types of things that would normally could be a barrier for them to participate. We also provided our youth with stipends, and in some instances, the youth participated based on resources that were provided by our county partners. So it wasn't just the state covering the costs. Our county partners were a state-supervised, county-administered state for our child welfare services, and our county partners also assisted with getting youth and parents to the table, as well as our foster parents. We found that their participation in the focus groups that were held throughout the various regions within the state was really also facilitated by our county partners. We worked very closely in conjunction with our counties, and they were very helpful in not only identifying youth but also assisting with transportation and any other costs that would offset their time that they would be joining the focus groups for the CFSR assessment.
Because that's at least a starting place, but it comes back to funding.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. That's great, Linda.
Thank you, California. Somebody needs to mute their phone. They're having a private conversation about funding.
Can you hear us?
Hi. Yep.
You
good.
Can?
Any other states, could you please comment on what you're doing to involve family members in your agency?
Hi, this is Stephanie Maldonado from Pennsylvania. And what I wanted to talk about a little bit is some of our youth engagement efforts for this round includes we've established a group of youth ambassadors that are through our child welfare training program, and they're a group of 12 to 13 youth from various counties. We have 67 counties in Pennsylvania that come to our monthly CFSR steering committee meetings. And they're actually providing a youth perspective that we are including in our statewide assessment. These youth ambassadors actually wrote their own focus group questions for youth across the state and conducted their own focus groups. We thought it would be really interesting to have youth actually conduct their own focus groups with other youth to see the input and the responses from that peer-to-peer contact, and it was very valuable for us. The youth ambassadors are also planning a youth forum that's going to happen in March, which is going to gear up youth across the state for becoming involved in our program improvement plan. The youth obviously understand that and want to be very involved in the program improvement plan and what the state looks forward to doing with those. So they are going to learn in March what that all means, and to be able to provide some input for us so that we can get their perspective and how to move forward with initiatives. So we're very excited about that.
Stephanie, this is Linda from California. Are your youth ambassadors former foster youth, or are they a mix of current foster youth and former foster youth?
They're current foster care youth.
They are, okay.
Right. Now, we do have two youth interns from our child welfare training program. I think the one is going to be completing very shortly, and the other one might already have been completed, but all the other youth are still current foster care youth.
This is Mary O'Brien. I want to say about the youth involvement, we had a teleconference in June on youth involvement in the CFSR process, you know, and the audio file for that would be on our website. We had a great presentation by a youth leader who's part of a national team that's been talking about promoting youth involvement. He gave some very specific tips. And then our resource center developed, along with the Resource Center for Youth Development that was part of that call, a toolkit on youth development that is actually also on our website. And that's a great practical tool about youth involvement. And I've been thinking about it during this call because there's a number of – they do stress things like supporting the youth, compensating them. Stephanie in Pennsylvania just mentioned this idea of a group of youth, sometimes the idea of involving more than one person when I think it was Stacy described being the one parent at the table. I wondered about the lessons from youth involvement, which has been that it's helpful to involve more than one person. If you have three or four, a group, that makes it easier for the youth to be involved. It could also be true for parents. They also talked a lot in the youth involvement toolkit about the importance of training your staff to work with youth, same way as training staff to work with parents. So I think it's there's some parallel lessons that can be drawn from that material. So I just suggest people might want to look at that. Stephanie, in Pennsylvania, can you answer this? You had mentioned in the survey response about how you have quality improvement committees that involve families and that you're really particularly struggling with involving birth families. And I thought if you could tell us a little bit about your efforts in that area, maybe we could see if other people have comments about involving birth families in, you know, getting input from birth families in sort of agency, sort of ongoing management and policy in the CFSR process.
Sure. Yes, our Quality Improvement Committee is our overarching committee that meets quarterly, and we started doing some individual outreach. We actually have some help with our Pennsylvania Family Support Alliance, helped us identify some birth parents that we could reach out to and invite them to our committee. And one of the things that I found out in doing these outreach efforts is that it takes a great deal of time to be able to get them to feel comfortable. I mean, I know I go to meetings and I'm overwhelmed with the amount of information that's being covered, so I can only imagine how they feel when they come to meetings and their acronyms are thrown around like everyone should know what they are, and we kind of forget when we have the youth and the families at the table not to do that and not to speak that language and to break it down and to remind ourselves how to explain everything better. So I always, you know, it's important for me that they feel comfortable. So, you know, in between email exchanges and phone calls, I think that helps out a lot. The unfortunate thing for our birth parents is we do offer mileage and reimbursement for meals and daycare, but we don't currently have any compensation other than that, and I think that's one area that we're definitely going to have to look into further. One of the good things that's developing now is through our child welfare training program, we're actually looking at opening up a parent representative position within that agency and a family member coordinator position, because we realize how much time and energy that whole effort takes, and we thought that would be one of the best approaches to take. So hopefully that'll be happening over the next year, and we can help with those efforts. That's really one area that we're struggling with right now, but we're trying to do some different things to try to make that better.
This is Steve Priester. I wanted to comment about that acronym thing, because that's an issue every time you involve family members and youth in the life of the agency. I don't know if any of you all are NewsHour junkies on PBS like I am, but if somebody's on the NewsHour and they say FCC, Jim Lehrer will say, "You mean the Federal Communications Commission?" I've seen jurisdictions who have, whenever there's meetings where parents and birth parents and family caregivers or youth are present, they have someone assigned to attend that meeting who, every time somebody uses an acronym like 4B, that person's job is to say, "That stands for the Child and Family Services Plan. Do you understand what that is?" And basically acts as a translator at those meetings.
One of the things we do in Oregon is we have a handout for parents if they're going to a state child welfare advisory meeting, and they know every single one of those acronyms. But still, I totally agree with you. But I think it's just to have it like a cheat sheet, so when they're saying all these names, that they understand. And again, I think it's knowing the audience that the parents are going to be presenting at is really important.
Right. This is Mary O'Brien, and the compensation issue is interesting because Pennsylvania, you mentioned that you're not compensating them for time, and I think when Linda in California, when you mentioned that you compensate parents for travel and lost wages and child care, but you probably also aren't actually paying them for an hourly wage or whatever for their time.
No, you're right. Actually, what we do is we ask them to give us the estimate of what it would be. So we don't say we're paying you $10 for an hour. We ask them how much would they have lost during the time they spent with us for that day.
And I think my understanding is North Carolina is going a little further than that in terms of compensating parents.
Yes. Well, it's actually, through the system of care grant that we have family partners that are funded in each of the counties where we are doing that work. That's separate and apart from what we're doing statewide with compensating parents, and that's actually at $15 an hour.
Right, but then the compensating parents, is that done also as a lost wages thing, or is it more something where you're able to give them an hourly rate?
We're able to give them an hourly rate.
Yeah. Neat.
Do you anticipate that you'll be able to continue doing that once your system of care grant has concluded?
Yes, we do.
That's great.
Well, and that's the thing. We were asking the question earlier about the source of funds for that. So we'll try to get some more information on that.
I apologize for not having that. I hate to say the wrong thing.
Let's see, are there any more questions or discussion? Well, Mary, I can't think of what else we need to do.
Okay. If there's nothing else that people want to discuss, I think we could maybe, say thank you to everyone for participating, Steve. Is this a good time?
Yes, I will go ahead and do that, Mary, and then also talk about the evaluations.
Exactly. Okay, thank you. Well, Steve and Stephanie and I want to say thank you to everyone for coming, and thank you very much to our presenters, to Candace Britton, Stacey Darby. Thank you very much for North Carolina, and Angela Long and Ruth Taylor. Thank you guys from Oregon. We'll try to follow up with that question about particular funding questions. If you have, please look at all the material on our website. If you have particular questions, I know people would be happy to have you follow up with them individually, and their contact information is on that agenda and contact information piece on the website. we do have evaluation forms for this teleconference. In the email that you got with the phone number to call in on, there is a link you can go to fill out an evaluation form. You also should have gotten an email today with that link again. We really would ask you to please fill in the evaluation form and give us some feedback on what you liked about the call, what other kind of information you'd like to have. We do use that information to plan these teleconferences, so we really appreciate getting that information. So thank you all for coming.
Mary, let me just add that while we were on the call, Marty Snyder from our Resource Center sent out the link for the evaluation form to all the participants.
Right. So it should be in your inbox when you get back to your office. Okay, good. Well, with that, we'll say thank you very much to everyone, and we hope to see you again in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
Goodbye.
You.
Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation, and have a wonderful day. You may now all disconnect.